A very good Friday, everybody. And sorry about this. We lost a bit of the morning here. Unfortunately, the line at I don't know if it was the line at the track or it might have been my wire. I did the wire I used to connect to the internet there. I got a feeling it's the wire. I'll find out later. But and then of course I came running back home to get the show going, and I've got redundancies of everything. I got two cords, and the other cord, when I when I packed the bag, the second cord had either fallen out or had been set aside. So I didn't have my usual resource to try a second line. But either way, we lost 20 minutes, and we really couldn't afford to lose 20 minutes today, to be honest, because it's a busy show. Casey, let's get Marty McGee in first. And we're actually only 8 minutes lost. And I'm actually glad, listening to what Kay just ran from yesterday, it gives you a little bit of a weekend feel into, I thought, everywhere I looked, a terrific weekend. And I don't know if you saw the tweet last night, but when I got a chance to look at Sunday's Ellis card, if you have not looked yet, Scully's going to look at Ellis with us, at least at the stakes. If you have not seen the Ellis card on Sunday, please set it aside and give them your attention. It's their biggest day. I mean, the groupie doll is not graded right now, but it's their biggest day. And boy, they should be very pleased with the card they put together. Maiden races as well as the stakes, and I was like, I'm going to be hard pressed not to do some things on this card, I think, on Sunday. And if you look at it, you will be equally engaged. The groupie doll, and you got the juvenile and the debutante, and you've also got. Is it a mile? They call it the mile? No, the Oaks, the Audubon Oaks. So, Ellis with a big day on Sunday, and of course, the Saratoga Del Mar stuff, that needs no lily gilding. we got plenty to look forward to. And the worst part about not being at the racetrack is that I had a bunch of live guests for the second half of the show. So instead, we'll have Chuck and Barry together on the phone, and we'll talk at the end of the morning as well to the team from the Georgia Horse Racing Initiative. They're going to try again. They've had such frustrating experience trying to get some semblance of either a actual racing facility and gambling in Georgia, but they're ready for another try at it. So we'll get everybody in. Right now, though, we'll start right away, and we'll tell you that we've got $124,000 carryover. We'll talk about with Nick later, and Nick Tamaro. It's a very difficult sequence, and so forth. So the situation here at Saratoga, or at the track anyway, a potential, I don't know, half a million easily, I would think, into the pick six pool. But it is a treacherous sequence. Marty McGee is standing by, and Casey, Marty said he's having trouble hearing us.
Clearly.
Marty, how you
doing?
There we go. That's better?
Good. We're good now, Vic.
Excellent. Marty, first of all, Marty, how's the knee?
We're not going to talk about old man stuff, are we?
Well, yeah, you got it at least. Well, I felt terrible. You suffered. You had the knee replacement, and it was a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, they say knees are harder than anything, except maybe shoulders. But June 7th, I had my left knee replaced. It's been first few weeks were real tough. I don't think I've been on with you since maybe the Derby, Vic. I mean,
almost
Preakness, and yeah. Something like that. Come on. But anyway, it's okay. You know, I'm 66 days out now, so it gets better as it goes along. So time is the most critical factor in all of it. So yeah, we're healing up, and I'm actually going to be at Churchill, what's today, tomorrow for the Million and the Beverly D, and I haven't been out there for quite a while. I went out there before the knee replacement to watch Richie work one day, the time he went between races, but I understand they've torn down the paddock already, and they've got all kinds of stuff going on out there. So, and then, you know, getting to this point with the Million, actually running it on the turf, you know, has been something of a chore for a lot of people for obvious reasons. But nonetheless, we're all set for tomorrow. And then Sunday over to Ellis Park. Haven't been there this meet. Spent a lot of time there last year. But, yeah, they're going to have their marquee day with the Ellis Park Derby and the Groupie Doll on Sunday.
It's a fabulous card, and I'm glad you'll be there to cover it, and we'll talk about it with James Scully in a little bit. Marty, before we look at the Million and the Bev D and actually talk about this whole situation, there were two passings here in within, I don't know, 72 hours of each other earlier in the week. T.V. Smith and then Noel Hickey, and you had plenty of occasion to cover them and be friendly with them, as well as seemingly especially with Noel Hickey.
Yeah, I mean, T.V. Smith, the first thing I think of with him is ex-Arvin. And I was talking to his daughter, Trish. T.V. lost his wife a few years ago. He was 84 when he died. I think it was last Friday or Saturday. But he leaves behind a son who's a physician in Scottsdale, Arizona, and he leaves behind Trish Burrell Smith, who's worked in a number of capacities in racing, including at Churchill Downs for long stints. She's now in private business, but I asked her what she thought he was in terms of the leading trainers all time at Ex-Arvin, which closed, what, in 70? I don't know what year it closed, 85?
80s.
Like that.
Mid-80s, because I was there in 80. I was there in 84 or 5.
I never got to go there. Wish I would have. But
that was cool.
You know, he was born in South Dakota and grew up, you know, at OCAD and Columbus. And, you know, I actually went to Lincoln one time, Vic, 1979,
wow.
Actually, on the way back from Rocky Mountain National Park and Yellowstone in my 74 yellow-orange Chevy Vega. fill up the oil, check the gas. But, you know, that's what I think of TV is that. And the first time I met him was in the early 90s at Arkansas. And what a swell guy. He really, when he sent out some of these horses, you could really, you know, take it to the bank. And, you know, I told this story about ultimately he ended up wintering in Gulfstream, which is where I was in the late 90s, early 2000s. And he won the Holy Bull with that horse, Grits and Hard Toast, and he loved telling that story about how the horse got his name. He said one morning a groom didn't show up, and he asked one of the other grooms, "Where do you think the guy is?" And he says, he's probably in jail eating Grits and Hard Toast. So, and then I had forgotten he ended up winning the Holy Bull a second time four years later. He won 90 with that horse that he got in. That's what I'm talking
Lansden
about.
Robbins.
In the Derby. Yeah, for Lansden, yeah. Otherwise, that's what I'm talking about. Might have run better in the Derby. Kind of held him up a little bit. But anyway, he had a long life. I would run into him at the YMCA here. He was doing that. He retired in 07, I think. I'd see him occasionally over there. And he's, you know, always had nice things to say. And I know that his daughter, Trish, is heartbroken by it, but you know, we can all agree he had a good run. As far as Noel Hickey goes, I mean, he was absolutely remarkable in his operation. It was somewhat unique in that he was the breeder, owner, trainer, which isn't done at, you know, it's done at lower levels, but the way he dominated Arlington Park late 80s, early 90s, with a lot of his homebreds, particularly in longer high-end grass races, was great. And I became real friendly with him. I assume the Arlington beat in 93 and worked there, you know, pretty much lived off and on in Chicago for two or three years up there, particularly in the summers. I did cover Sportsman's and Hawthorne there one winter. spent a decade there one winter. But anyway, he was perennially fighting with Mr. Duchessois over horseman's issues because, you know, he had a lot at stake. But he was really kind of a unique guy in that he said what he thought. He was extremely nice to me. He named a three-quarter sister to Buck's Boy after my older daughter, Kelly McGee. She never ran, but she did produce horses such as the Great McGee and My Dad Marty and things like that. So I've got one regret, Steve. You know, he lived in Ocala. He ran his last horse in 2013. He stopped really coming north years before that. But talking about Noel Hickey, who died at 92 on, I guess, Tuesday or Wednesday. And I should have stopped on all my travels to and from South Florida in Ocala to see him, and I never did. I'm really regretting that now. You know, always seems like you're too busy or in too much of a hurry to do that. But I just wish I'd had one last round with him, you know, had lunch with him or something, but I did not. And Godspeed to Noel Hickey.
Well, and you know, you look at a career like his and T.V. Smith's too, it sort of transcends the current era. I mean, whenever a horseman passes whose stats are not, they basically predate Equibase's tally. You know, there's estimates and they pull the numbers up from the American Racing Manual and cobble together career statistics. But the glance at a record on Equibase for a guy like Noel Hickey is kind of incomplete.
Yeah, I don't know how far he went back. You know, he was a track star. He was from Ireland and he moved to Canada in his mid-20s. And was in private business there, but he said he always had a deep love for horses, even as a young man. So I don't know at what point he actually got into the full bore breeding, owning, training, but it was a fabulous success. His victory in the 1998 Breeders' Cup Turf with Buck's Boy was tremendous. I remember just how thrilled he was, and I was really happy for him. And that was fairly typical. He had a horse named Lady Cheryl. I think she was a Grade One winner. I think she won the E.P. Taylor. I didn't go through all of his stakes horses, but there was a certain period of time, Steve, where he just turned out a lot of really high quality horses, and really, I think it was a testament to his acumen as a great horseman.
Well, and you mentioned some of his most notable runners. The horse that I think if I remember a horse of his beside Buck's Boy that sort of made him familiar to me, and I first became aware because of some of the regional. The way in which regional interest, you first get familiar with the horses and horsemen, of the circuit that you're following. And Golden Gear, in the mid-90s, and that's really when I, started to get serious about the game. And I remember being a Golden Gear fan. And he had, and that, that's a horse that is underrated. And one of my favorite monikers, a horse that time forgot.
Yeah, he was owned by I think was maybe part owner in him, but a guy named Barry Golden was the owner of Golden Gear, and if I recall, he ran early to mid 90s at Keeneland in one of the races, might have won one of them. I'm pretty sure that Hillary Pridham, who is Mike Stidham's girlfriend,
sure,
who at the time was Noel's longtime assistant. I think her name was down as trainer of that horse at a certain point. Maybe Noel had some kind of suspension or something. But anyway, if you go through the record books, I think Hillary Pridham is the trainer of record of one of the stakes wins at Keeneland for Golden Gear.
How about that? That's pretty cool. Good. Marty McGee, folks, he's a catch-all. He's a funk and a wagonal. Marty, I appreciate the, both of those thoughts, and Noel Hickey and T.V. Smith, and if I can catch Lance, then if I can catch Lance then one morning at the track, I saw him the first week of the meet. I'm sure Lance then could add some nice. That was Lance then Robbins first with Azalea Stables. That was T.V. was Lanson's first trainer. Marty, let's talk quickly about, you know, I don't think there's a ton to, you know, to say about the Arlington Million day tomorrow. Obviously, it started out with a, I think, a very difficult assignment, which was to, you know, somehow assuage people that are going to miss Arlington if they're, you know, if in fact there's never going to be an Arlington again. Then you fold in the difficulties with the turf and having the grass really mature quickly enough to, you know, to take the kind of use that is necessary. So this, while the card is okay, I mean, there's certainly nothing wrong with the card itself, but the concept feels like it's been a little bit dogged, you know, from every angle.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, tough spot here. You know, Churchill kind of painted themselves in a corner in a certain respect in that they came up with this concept of let's go on and perpetuate the Beverly D and the Million, and they, of course they had planned on having the Secretary and the Pucker up too, but those were put on, quote, on hiatus, unquote, till next year. I think the conventional wisdom is, I don't know if I've written this or not, or if it's appeared in print, but I think the intention is to go ahead and run these races next year and on down at Colonial Downs, which of course has a great turf course and is in the process, it's not complete, of being bought by Churchill Downs Incorporated. So for 2023 and beyond, I'm not sure about this, but I think these races will be held at Colonial and, you know, in the safety of all that with the, you know, how good the turf is, et cetera. In the meantime, we've got this current dilemma whereby, what is this? Today is Friday, August 12th. About 10 days ago, there was major consternation as to whether or not these races could be held on the Churchill turf course, or would they be transferred elsewhere? And ultimately, of course, Churchill decided to do it this way. We're just going to run the Beverly D on the outer paths, 24 feet out. We're going to run it early on the card. In the meantime, while they run all these other dirt races, take down that rail and then run the Million on the inner paths. That way they have, quote-unquote, fresh ground to run these races over. In the meantime, everybody's holding their breath. As one trainer told me yesterday off the record, God forbid were his words, if something untoward happens on one of these grass races, we're all going to be paying for it.
Well, let's talk about the races themselves. And the Bev D, kind of a narrow set of fillies and mares, fuller field for the Million of nine, and a good field. I don't think anybody would you know question the quality of it. The distance. What's been the chatter about the mile and the eighth configuration?
Well, I think given the layout of the course, they could not have run a mile and 3/16. You know, you got a
right.
You got a 7/8. So that was the two things there. You know, the Beverly D, of course, is running a mile and 3/16. Arlington's circumference was wider. You know, they had a mile and an eighth main track, whereas Churchill only has a mile. So that's you know, again, we're talking about bridging these races, Steve, going from last year at Arlington to this year at Churchill, and I you know, again, on the assumption they go next year to Colonial. So, where you could run them back at their traditional distances. But Chad Brown, who has the horse who I think will be less than 2-1, Rougier, as the favorite in the Beverly D, said this mile and an eighth distance pretty much hits her right between the eyes. So he's been very he was disappointed with both her runs in the New York and the Diana, but I think she finds a lighter spot in here, and I'm looking for her to be more like even money as opposed to 2-1 in the Beverly D.
Jump over to the million, and this is a this is a lot, frankly, a really familiar cast. Did we lose Marty? I think we did. Yeah, Case? Is that, yeah, that's, sounded like, yeah. All right, get him back. Yeah, Marty just texted Case. He said we lost. He call dropped. So, get him back. Yeah, let's get him back for the million. And, of course, the rest of the card, if you haven't looked at it yet, the way it lays out, the Bev D is the fifth. And starts a pick four. Then there's an open, there's a maiden sprint for two-year-olds. The Lady Tack, and talk about familiar fillies and mares. Bell's the one in Wisconsin. You can't run a sprint in Kentucky without Bell's the one in Wisconsin. Then there's another maiden special. This is three and ups going 7/8. There's a second level allowance going a mile and a 16th. Then the Fort Larned group of seven. Led by maybe, I guess, Twilight Blue. Yeah. Actually, Joe Sharp's got two of the favorites, along with King Fury and Mr. Wireless. So some familiar names there. And then the Arlington Million. Marty is back with us. Marty, some thoughts about this group of nine?
I mean, it's pretty good. It's not great. You can't help but think that if Mega City runs with Smooth Like Straight, it's going to set up for somebody else, and we all know how luckless Smooth Like Straight has been, even though he's racked up almost $1.6 million in earnings, and he's run eight straight triple-digit buyer speed figures. So you got to consider Smooth Like Straight the one to beat if, in fact, he can extricate himself from some kind of ruinous pace scenario with Mega City. But I went with Santine off of his Turf Classic win on Derby Day. I quoted Brendan Walsh extensively in my Arlington Million Advance as to how the horse has never been better. Clearly, he liked the new turf surface, when he won the Derby Day race.
Yeah.
And Brendan thinks it's going to be a lot. He thinks it's going to be a lot like that in terms of the condition of the course. So I think the way that things set up. He comes out of that really curious Manhattan that Chad Longshot, led throughout in precious passion fashion, and doing that. That was really kind of a weird setup in that. But anyway, I think it will set up for a closer here, and I'm going to go with Santine.
I'm personally, I've been a Santine sucker from day one. There are a couple of considerations, and at a price, because Dallas is always a price. Cavalry Charges race in Indy, that was a career best. I mean, if you're a sheep user, and Cavalry Charge doesn't seem outlandish as an inclusion,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, he ought to trip out real well. I mean, he ought to be third or fourth sitting a real nice trip under David Cohen. So, behind Smooth Like Straight and Mega City, and then you got your left field comers, so like Set Piece and Sacred Life and Admission Office especially, But otherwise, he ought to mid-pack it for a while, and if he's good enough, he'll be there.
How about a couple of other spots on the card? Lady Tack and the Fort Larned. Anything else that you thought was a good gamble?
I gave up on Intrepid Heart a long time ago. He was $1 million horse for Todd and then just kind of fizzled out. But he's really kind of been resurgent. He's traded hands a few times. But he ran a Hunter Buyer Louisiana Derby week down at Fairgrounds. He just got beat in a tough allowance by the quality horse Mask Parade in his last, and I think he's really rounded back into form. Tyler Gaglione, who, of course, has been the dominant rider at Keeneland and Churchill the last few years. He's back for the day. He's got the mount on Intrepid Heart, so I'll make him one of my top picks for the day.
You know, I brought up Tyler either yesterday or Wednesday after a slow start at Saratoga. He's pulled it together and has suddenly, you know, become again. I think there were some people that are kind of glossing over him a little bit, you know, for those that play hot jocks. And it feels like Gaffleone is getting into a rhythm.
He is good. That's why he's doing good. If you really pick apart his rides, he seems fabulous. So, yeah, that's why he's doing good.
There you go. Well, Marty, I appreciate this, and I'm sure you'll handicap the Ellis card that'll show up in the form?
Yeah, I'll do some picks for that. Like I said, I'll be down there. I'll do some post-race riding, you know, Sunday at the track, and then some stuff for next week. Then I'm going to try and... I'm going to go to Maryland for a few days vacation and watch the Travers at Timonium as per usual. So can't wait.
I love it. I love it. That's great. That's great. Marty McGee, everybody, back for a midsummer visit. And, of course, he's also still keeping tabs on the Gulfstream action on top of everything else. Marty, thanks so much.
Thanks, buddy. Talk to you.
You bet. DRF McGee, everybody, about 10 minutes to the top of the hour. Let's get Scott Shapiro in. I guess we'll, you know what, we'll keep up with the well, he'll do Del Mar too, but I'm sure he must have a couple of Churchill opinions, because why not? You know, I do have to mention a couple of things about, and I'm going to have to do this on the fly, let me look at the quick sheet, as I mentioned them the other day. We may need to reach out to Gary Palmisano, because Gary kind of surprised me last night. In fact, I'm going to do a quick research. And actually, I'm sure Scott will have information about this two-day wager that ties the million card tomorrow to the groupie doll card at Ellis on Sunday. And I wouldn't mind getting the particulars of this, because it doesn't seem like it's really been publicized, and I don't see it glaringly on the wagering menu. A lot of times, you know, most times, you've got the notations, and like when I do my write-ups, you know that I always, you know, try to put all the, you know, the relevant wagers along the way, but I do not see this. So we're going to go to and here's Scott Shapiro. So that'll be the first question we ask of Scott before I start texting Palmisano. Scott Shapiro, good morning. Scott?
Hello? Yeah. Hey.
Yeah. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
We're good. Scott, before we talk about anything, what do you have on the two-day bluegrass, the multi-day wager hooking Churchill and Ellis?
I didn't do much work on the Ellis race, but I can talk a little bit about the sequence here. Let me pull it up.
Yeah, just to know, yeah. Because I have not seen this publicized much at all.
Yeah, there's a release for those in the media. Darren sent out on Wednesday at about 2:02.
All right, let me pull it up.
Yeah, okay. Would have been on Wednesday, August 10th, 2:02 p.m. And it's a dollar pick six, three races from Churchill on Saturday, three races at Ellis on Sunday, and low 15% takeout mandatory payout. We've got the Beverly D and the Arlington Million, as well as the $200,000 Lady Tack on the Churchill Saturday card. And then on Sunday, we've got the $125,000 Groupie Doll, which I didn't get to dive into, but looks very salty, as well as the Audubon Oaks and the $200,000 Ellis Park Derby, which looks pretty competitive as well. So, unique wager. It starts at 3:01 p.m., race 5 on Saturday at Churchill, and then goes throughout the weekend, and it's part of a very solid wagering menu over the Saturday card, the Arlington Million card.
Very good. Now I do have it, and this one escaped notice. So I will put out a little tab on it for everybody. So thank you.
Yeah, no problem. And we'll promote it tomorrow on the show. We'll have Megan Devine on from Ellis along with James Scully in the paddock to discuss it in the pregame show. So we'll be featuring it plenty. And, yeah, pretty good card on Ellis, and we're really appreciative at Churchill for them swapping a day off their calendar for us.
Excellent. All right. For you, what between Churchill and Del Mar?
Yeah, it's just a couple of plays. Do you want to talk the states, or what's best? You tell me.
Whatever you like. Whatever your best
best plays.
You know, your best plays.
Okay. Well, the opener, I like a couple of the maiden races to me are the ones on the Arlington Million card that intrigue the most, and we can do a couple Del Mars. But in the opener, I like number 8, Melania, second time starter for Michael Tomlinson on debut. Broke from the rail, always tough for a firster. Didn't have the cleanest trip, and this horse might want the turf in the end, but I thought when she found her stride in the lane, she showed me something. And the added ground should benefit, as should the move from the rail to the outside. I think a very fair price at 12-1, and I'm going to hook her up with number 9, Baby Got Backspin, who was in that same race, won by Holiday Decision for for Tom Amos, who had a huge meet and obviously a huge year with the Milestone victory. I thought Baby Got Backspin ran huge that day as well, so this would be a much shorter price. So 8-9 for me to kick off the card in one of several very competitive maiden special weeks throughout the afternoon.
Yeah, agreed. And
yeah, there's some good ones here. Let's see what we got here. The other maiden play that I like quite a bit comes in race 6, which is a 2-year-old for the boys. And number 10, Storm and Army, when I walked into Churchill on June 30th, never heard so much buzz on a David Vance firster. But this horse was well meant that day. Went off at 5-1 in a field of 10, breaking from the inside. David Vance, not a lot of success recently with firsters. This horse took money and ran well. Got out of the gate pretty well, but Roman Giant, the Asmussen wire-to-wire winner, popped the gate. So I wasn't able to get to that one, but I think the added ground, the experience, and again, a move from the inside to the outside will really benefit Storm and Army, the number 10 horse in race 6, who's 5-1 on the morning line.
Very good. The outside
and,
box,
McGee. Yes, definitely advantageous. I think that's true anywhere of debut-type horses, but certainly doesn't hurt at any of the tracks that I follow, at least. But, yeah, the Beverly D, Steve, I didn't have a very strong opinion. I heard you talking briefly with Marty on it, but didn't hear who he liked. I did pick Family Way. I think Rougier is probably the most likely winner, but very, very little would surprise me in there in that 5-horse field.
Fair enough.
And I think Sconson looks like a standout in the Lady Tack. Should get a good trip. I think this horse is much better cutting back from getting back to 6 furlongs. The 7 furlongs is a little bit much, especially chasing Lady Rocket, who set pretty slow fractions or was loose in the Grade 3 Chicago. Bell's the One had trouble that day. Definitely forgivable. But I just think Sconson's a better horse than Bell's the One now. And those two look clearly the class and the ones to beat in that event, which is, as I mentioned, like the Beverly D, part of that Bluegrass Pick 6.
You know, I for those that are building that ticket, Scott, I don't know if tomorrow is the day for 4-year-old Joyful Cadence, but she is going to interject herself. You know, Wisconsin had to work to get, you know, by her in the winning colors, and Joyful Cadence is the filly on the come in this group and in this division. She is just maybe, you know, 2-3 lengths still in arrears, but you know, she is there, and you know, there's a chance that I suppose that Love Me Some Me, Tommy Drury's Well, she, you know, she's more of a seven furlong type sprinter. Joyful Cadence may just be the one to catch, and we'll see how Johnny Ortiz and Raylu Gutierrez approach it. But Sconson and Bell's the one. Joyful Cadence is making up some ground on them.
Yeah, my question with her is I've always been a fan of this filly, even since her debut win at Oaklawn. I think she's got some talent. I think the trip is going to be interesting. She draws inside Love Me For Me and Music City Star, both who really have only one way to go. And I know Love Me For Me is kind of more of seven furlongs, but this is a really amped up filly. She struggles to relax in the paddock. I mean, she's her own worst enemy in many ways, but she's fast. And I just don't think there's any way they can relax her. You know, she was beaten handily by Travel Column last time out, who really looking forward to seeing her return. She was great that day on June 29th. But I'd be surprised if Joyful Cadence is able to get away with, you know, any sort of moderate fractions if she is on the lead. And if she's not, you know, getting the jump on Sconson, maybe sitting just off Love Me Some Me and Music City Star might be the play. But with an honest pace, I just think Sconson, you know, remember, Sconson was coming off a long layoff in that winning colors. Joyful Cadence, you know, had some recency. So while I do respect her and she's a four taking on these older mares, I do think it's going to be a tough task for her to win. But if you get her through, you know, in any of the horizontal wagers, you know, she might not be a huge price by any stretch, but I sense a lot of people will either be singling or doubling up. So it would definitely be a noteworthy move.
All right, press forward.
Okay, and then let's just go to the 10th is the, pardon me, is the Fort Larned. And I think Twilight Blue was a single here. This is a horse that's been on for the last couple of starts. Impressive win against Masquerade and Buck Moon on May 13th. Tremendous effort against Folsom, going a mile and a 16th on June 25th, that was another mile and a 16th effort. He could have easily won that day. He's run incredibly well over the surface, continues to move forward, and if we can get anywhere near 5-2, I'll be all in on Twilight Blue in the $200,000 Fort Larned. The mile and 3/16th, a little bit of a question, but I think he's going to be out there on the lead under Brian Hernandez, who does opt to ride Twilight Blue over King Fury, one of the other favorites, which I think is pretty noteworthy.
All right.
And then in the million, not a super strong opinion. I don't trust Smooth Like Straight, who is, you know, the fastest and classiest horse in the field, but just finds ways to get beat no matter if he's 10-1 in the Breeders' Cup or 2-5 in the Shoemaker Mile. I think Santon's going to get the right trip. He's shown the ability to run well over this new turf course in the Turf Classic. Maybe regressed a little bit. He had the shoe repair in the Manhattan at a mile and a quarter, chasing Tribhuvan. But Tyler Gaffleone back aboard, should get a real good trip just outside of Mega City and Smooth Like Straight. So I went with Santon as a little bit of a lukewarm top pick, and I think Admission Office may be able to pass some tiring rivals in there. I think the pace will be pretty honest with Smooth Like Straight and Mega City, so maybe Admission Office underneath.
All right, so we're all kind of gravitating towards Santon.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not in love with the price. I don't fully trust, but I'm not sure who I trust in there. I think Set Piece, more of a mile and a 16th type horse. Like I said, I don't fully trust Smooth Like Straight, but respect him quite a bit. And I know you're under a time crunch for Del Mar. I'll just give you one play tomorrow. Race 4, number 7, Shadow Sphinx, if I can say that. Shadow Sphinx drops in for a tag. Second start of the meet for Kristen Mulhall, 11-time winner. Never really found clear sailing against better on July 24th, gone a mile and an eighth. Now cuts back. There's some speed in here. 7-2 on the line. Shadow Sphinx in race 4 is my best bet of the day at Del Mar.
Excellent. Nice. And it's also nice to... It's just, you know, it's funny. I gotta take a look at the. Well, I guess, you know, I was just about to say that, you know, Kristen Mulhall just has not been sending out a lot of horses, but she's actually had 59 starters this year, and she got back up to 124 last year after kind of a quiet period, 2018, 2019, 2020. But it feels like, yeah, it feels like she's gearing back up again. She and, of course, her late father, Richard, and a longtime association with Shadwell, and always like to see Kristen Mulhall do well.
Yeah, hasn't sent out a lot of horses, like you said. Had two in the seventh yesterday. One of them ran a pretty good second. The other one, Secret Square, off the layoff, I think ran pretty well considering it was a sprint. Was dead on the board. I would expect that one to move forward for her later on in the meet. It's been a horse that's liked Del Mar in the past.
Well, Scott, kind of an unusual circumstance. Everybody has to, right? Everybody has to gear up. I guess you won't be. Where are you going to be doing cut-ins from? Up on the balcony.
We've got, you know where the Aristides Lounge is, where the Kentucky Derby draw is. There's a loft above there where they hold events from time to time, seminars we've done up there. That's where the set's going to be for the next year. So we've moved up there. We've got one day. It's a pretty good setup. We rehearsed yesterday, my first time seeing it. So it'll be fun, you know, like you said, unique, little odd, but... good card, and we'll make the most of it without question. Should be a fun day.
Looking forward to getting an unusual midsummer, you know, live look in at the progress at Churchill and this million Bevdi card that is clearly under a little duress. Let's just be honest, and I'm sure it'll feel differently as the years progress. So, thanks, Scott. I appreciate it. Scott Schapp, 34, everybody, and the Twin Spires weekend preview continues. It's top of hour two, and we did lose, you know, we lost those 20 minutes. I'm sorry about that. And it does turn out, I think it definitely was my court. I just was exchanging some info with Donnie over at Naira. So I think this was an unforced error. And if I'd had the second cord, I'd have been all right. It fell out of the bag. Marcus Hirsch, Scott, after Scott, I think. And we've got Jay Pridman later, of course, as well. We'll also talk to Scully this hour. While we're raising Marcus, one thing from Sunday I want to slip in, too, in addition to Ellis's card. Sunday is Longacre's Mile Day, and Emerald, of course, the host of the Longacre's Mile, the most important race in the Pacific Northwest for decades upon decades. The target of, you know, virtually everybody from, you know, the Pacific Northwest, and as well as even, you know, Western Canada thoroughbred interests. And Doris Harwood, if I'm not mistaken, Doris Harwood is retiring. And she's going to have her last starter in a Longacre's Mile, five-star general, the now six-year-old. And Doris struggling a little bit through this meet, looking to break through, get off the duck for the meet, and then the familiar names, Blaine Wright and Blaine attacking the mile with Top Executive, as well as Huge Bigley, the midshipman 5-year-old, and he's also got Torpedo Away. So three for Blaine Wright. Tom Wenzel, another Pacific Northwest stalwart, and Slew's Tiz Whiz, a Slew's Tiz now, Washington bred. That would be a wonderful story, and it's a nice horse. He's going to have to step up. Everybody basically is dealing here, I think, with Majestic Eagle for Neil Drysdale and Declan Cannon. Coming to ride, as it happens. Michael Pewich, I mean, all the Pacific Northwest stalwarts are on hand for the Longacre's Mile. Papa's Golden Boy is a little interesting on the outside. Is going to have to, you know, just a little bit of a stretch out. And this is a horse that, you know, has tried to go two turns unsuccessfully. But Papa's Golden Boy feels like your pace setter from the outside. That Huge Bigley's got speed too, but it's route speed, you know, real routes. So Papa's Golden Boy, stretching out from 6 furlong efforts, is going to lead him certainly onto the backstretch. We'll see what happens from there. It's a nice group for the Long Acres Mile, and in addition, the Washington Oaks, the Emerald Distaff, on the day as well, and the Muckleshoot Derby, because it's fun to say Muckleshoot. Marcus Hirsch is standing by, and Marcus, have you for some reason ever had to do the advance for the Long Acres Mile?
No, I haven't.
It's.
But I have handicapped it before. I haven't looked at this year's.
It's a nice field.
Yeah, I skimmed Randy Golding's Daily Racing for Advance just a little while ago, and it was a quick skim. Got a lot on my plate today. Got Monmouth Sunday, Colonial Tuesday, Colonial at 4 stakes, Monmouth. Somehow the Rainbow Air didn't go for Saturday, and then ended up with 10 entries on Sunday's card.
Which is, you know, which is always a curiosity when you get those scenarios. We'll certainly cover the Colonial action for Tuesday, and it really does feel like we're at that cross section, Marcus. There's a lot of good racing going on. That this card at Ellis on Sunday is terrific. I just mentioned Emerald's big day on Sunday as well. You know, then you got the daily happenings at Saratoga and Del Mar.
Saratoga, I'm loving Saratoga this meet. I'm just crushing it. I don't know why, but I'm not going to question it. Everything
good for
makes
you.
Sense.
Well, and let me ask you this. This is completely unscheduled because we had other, you know, a bunch of things to discuss. But how are you betting right now at Saratoga? Because I've had tremendous frustrations involving the multis, where I've been taken down essentially from two very sizable scores and gotten beat on the square in tight circumstances in a couple. So the big multis have eluded me, but I think I've handicapped well, and I've kind of limped along with some dribs and drab scores, but the big ticket item has been missing.
I'm not playing any multi-race wagers.
Interesting. Okay.
In great part because on the Saturday cards I look at early, but these weekday cards I'm not looking at in advance. You know, I'm looking at them during the afternoon, so it's just one race at a time, and mainly exactas and trifectas have been clicking. And not, I mean, I don't know, it's like I've had this job for 21 years or something, and you know, I don't bet every day, but certainly plenty of gambling has taken place. But I still feel like I'm learning and evolving in the way that I approach things. And sometimes, you know, I think it just depends on where you are also in any particular meet or for yourself or whatever, just how you're playing and where your bankroll is. Like, do you have enough of a bankroll to crush win bets, or do you need to try to finesse a little bit more to make decent profits?
Yeah, as long as the bankroll holds out, I'm gonna keep swinging. Today we've got this. We've got this carryover that is going to get big, and
I'm tempted.
It's very tough, very tough.
Right? Yeah. No. I mean, I don't want to chase.
in situations like this because I'm not going to have enough coverage to compete with people who do.
Yeah.
And so I can end up personally just like it's kind of a waste. But I'll look at it. If there are a couple that I like, I'll try to put something together. But I mean, I totally like I understand the appeal of the multis, and there are periods where it seems like a great way to go for me. But recently, I've been I don't know. I just feel like it's okay to not be too focused on having this like universally noteworthy score necessarily, and doing a little more grinding.
I hear you. I hear you, and you're not wrong. I mean, because I know I've tried to. I've had with the circumstance, I've had more of an inclination to do some, some key wheeling of my typical type of a key horse. Some mid price long shots are that's always been my wheelhouse, and so. I've been trying some of that, first and second and, three, four horses. And, I'm not a super better. The tries and exactas.
In that vein, I've had quite a bit of luck in this summer, especially where if you're talking about a horse at least in that price range, if not longer. I mean, I will never bet to show, but if you just put the horse in third in the trifecta and can catch decent prices. Now, as long as you're a 9-horse field or above, you don't even have to have a huge price. You can have like a 5-2 favorite win, and if you're on a mid-price long shot that runs third, you're gonna make a good profit. So under in tries on horses that you're keying is not a bad thing to consider.
No, well framed. I'm glad this came up, actually, Marcus. Let's turn to some of the storylines of the weekend. And one of the things, actually, you wrote about it, I think, as part of the crossover between your coverage in New Orleans and your coverage of Colonial is, and frankly, the widespread affection that everybody has for Michelle Lovell, the anticipation of Damon's Mound in the Saratoga Special. And it's a small field, but boy, the top three contenders, Marcus, are very, very strong looking. It's gonna be an interesting race.
Okay, who's number three? I'm gonna have to go back here. I thought it was a two horse race. There's a third.
I think that horse from the horse come up from Florida is a real consideration. That Super Chow of George Delgado's. I would be a
consideration to keep Golf Board on this.
All right. I've got long-term respect and memory for Calder 2-year-olds showing up at this time of year up here, and they've gone through the gauntlet typically.
If this were the Sanford, I could see it. But I think these two horses are exceptional. And that horse is drawn on the rail. The rail has not been great.
Mm.
No choice but to go forward. Gulfport is extremely fast. He's going to be standing right on top of that horse. You're going to get the right price to guess that horse can beat back Gulfport and draw off. But we'll see. I mean, I'm just fascinated by Damon's Mound because he was so atypical for a flashy, July 2nd, fairly early, debut 2-year-old winner in that he didn't break all that well, which I'm concerned about to some extent, because I think Michelle Lovell said she was not surprised that he's not proficient out of the gate, which is not to say that he can't break just fine. But he was so switched off and so push-button and so responsive to his rider. And then the way he finished was spectacular. I mean, he really finished great under no urging. But Gulfport, too, his second-to-last furlong was like 11.89 in the Bashford Manor. He's very good. I'm interested to see how the betting goes in this. I ended up not touting Damon's Mound just because he could get bet so heavily that he's not any value, even as good as I think he might be. And And Gulfport, it might be for real, too.
It comes early in the card. It goes as the fourth race, and that's the start of that Saturday middle force-out mandatory-type pick five. You did, Marcus, as part of your game plan layout, you did go to the four-star Dave, and interesting, and this has got a pace question that's obviously going to hang over it as well, and the two principals, I thought, in terms of the rumors of who was entering, I thought it was going to just be Regal Glory and Casa Creed, but then when, you know, everything else was entered and involved, it sure feels like Masson has a chance to wire this field.
He's going to get loose from Get Smoking?
I can't see it.
I think Get Smoking leads and Mason comes outside and presses. And Brown said that this race has been the target for a long time. I mean, I think the horse is very well meant, but I'm going to trust in my understanding of this operation. I've been kind of on it all year, I feel like, knowing what their goals are with these different horses. And this has been this mare's race since the moment she crossed the wire in the Just a Game. Their intention is to make her the champion. If she wins this race off of those two wins she already has, it's going to be hard to unseat her from that position. And I've watched the workouts that were available online. She seems to be still thriving. She got, obviously, a great setup in the Just a Game, but that's because an Italian, you know, was there to push legs galore and make it a can't-lose situation. And I'm not saying that Mason is being sacrificed. He's in this to win this race, but he's going to be smoking with Get Smoking. Mason is a horse that he's a Euro, but he pulls hard. He wants to go fast. He can go as fast as you need, and to the extent that you think he can be on the lead, maybe. But in any case, the turf should be nice and firm, which Regal Glory likes. She's already 3-for-3 at Saratoga. I think that Mason will be, the divide between Mason and Casa Creed will be greater than the morning, I suggest. But they both will take enough action, I believe, that Regal Glory is not going to be like 3-5 or something. I think that, she's an extremely, extremely likely winner, and not at odds on, so, you know, can work. And it could work decently in the multi-race wagers we were discussing earlier.
Right, right. Well, and you got big fields that surround it, too. Closes
correct.
Out with a maiden 40. You got a 7 furlong for 3 and ups that comes before it. And that's a difficult race because you got a handful of firsters and then a couple of very, you know, fairly polished products that are looking to graduate. There's a first level allowance going a mile, a dozen of them. So yeah, that might be a big help for pick four, pick five players. And I'm a huge Regal Glory fan. My long friendship with Paul Pompa, and so easy to root for her.
Well,
she's
amazing. You know. I mean, I can't. What a crazy story. To suddenly, at the end of in the second part of her 5-year-old season, like hit a new level. You don't see that very often. Sometimes it's 5-year-old gelding, but 5-year-old mares. Part of it is a lot of them that are that talent and have been retired already. But she has not only gotten good; she has stayed good, and she's got. I mean, look how far back she was off a moderate pace at Gulfstream. And one going away. I mean, and she sat right off of the lead over a completely different kind of course than Jenny Wiley, and then a one-turn mile with an extremely fast pace right up her wheelhouse. I mean, what can't this horse do at this point?
Yeah,
and get
fair
weight.
Enough. All right. I know. The conditions.
Well, it's a handicap.
Right.
So she was assigned 119. It's interesting to see how people go about this thought process. I mean, I guess this. She gets 4 pounds from Mason. If you're just talking about overseas, it would be like a 3-pound weight break, not under handicap conditions. So I suppose there's that to consider. I don't know why she would get an extra pound from Mason, who has never even won a grade one or a group one, but that's just me.
Let's go to California and the three races Marcus put into the game plan for Saturday, the Sorrento at Del Mar, and then we'll come back up to Woodbine third for the Bold Venture. Sorrento thoughts?
Well, this is where I went to Florida, Steve. You're looking at the Toga Special. I'm Sorrento, Florida-ing. I mean, I do think Procrastination would be formidable. I did really like her her debut, and what I especially liked about it is that although she was fast out of the gate and showed a lot of speed, she actually came home very well. I mean, look how fast she got her last eight, and she did it easily. But it's a different track. She's drawn inside. I think there will be some other speed to press her. If she gets loose, it's probably all over. But I do love maidens going in two-year-old stakes races. I think it's a great angle to consider. Can't remember the horse's name. She already, I think, is out of action for Sadler, but she was a debut two-year-old winner in a Santa Anita stakes recently. And then... well, something strange is happening here. Am I missing a page, or did they redraw the race without my selection?
Am I missing a page? Let's see, 9, 10. No, I've got...
Yeah, what happened to my horse?
Your horse was scratched, the early scratch.
Okay, well, we don't need to talk about this then.
All right, so we need a new game plan.
Yeah,
Marcus
yep,
jumped to left end.
Yeah,
she's got to watch.
I guess she wasn't going to win.
I love it. Let's in that
there
case.
Was one thing, there was one. This reminds me exactly of. There was once a chart caller at Arlington who maybe had a habit of drinking a lot most every night and felt the effects of it the next day when calling the charts. This was an accumulative thing over years. A very nice person. But one day they ran a 5/8 sprint, turf sprint, and there were a lot of trees. Obscuring the backstretch, and the race had gone off, and it was about 20 seconds in, and he was heard to say, "Where are the bleeping horses?" Which is what I just said. Where is the bleeping horse?
Where is Infinite Diamond?
Yeah. Well, Woodbine. Hopefully, Woodbine didn't have early scratches.
No.
Okay. Well, those. How about those two races for
amazing
competitive, excellent
yep.
betting propositions? I considered both of them. I just accidentally deleted the close the tab that these CPs were in. So bear with me 1 second. The Trillium. Is that the first race?
13 of them.
Is, isn't it?
Yep. Well,
I liked horses that I didn't end up using for this exercise. Talbea, her first race after being imported from Europe in May was extraordinary. She came home so fast, but then she just was absolutely laid an egg on July 1st. Rebound potential, but I didn't find any excuse. Maybe there was an excuse, but I don't like going in off of that kind of dud. And then Cassie's other long shot in the winner's circle, I also thought held some appeal. But in the Bold Venture, Out of Door, I believe, he was ended up being entered in the Rainbow Air that came back. He might come out. And that's a pace factor that's out, too, which makes things even better for the horse I picked, 3-year-old No Balls. It's not No Balls, I don't believe. I know he's by Noble Mission, but anyway. Call it what you want. Here's another weird weight situation where it's a 3-year-old against older, and he's giving weight, which is, like, kind of unforgivable. time of year, you can't. I don't care what your allowance conditions are. The first thing that has to happen is the three-year-old gets weight against Open. But they're persevering anyway. I think the line, there was 137 points or something in this line, so take it with a grain of salt. 12-1 on this horse, don't see it. This horse came to my attention because he ran at Arlington, and they bought off of his, the original owner trainer stayed in, but now he got bought out at some point. This horse is a pure synthetic specialist who's very fast, but if you look back, he's also versatile. I think he's going to front here. I don't know how much the no-latex issue played a part in the quick call, but I also think that despite his win on turf, two back at Churchill, I don't think he really is a grass horse as much as a synthetic specialist. He's either going to be on the lead or right off of it. Not 12-1, but maybe 5-1. And even with other pace in the race, his tactical versatility is appealing, or he just goes wire to wire. I was also interested in this horse who could be, I mean, there are a bunch of 20-1s who are going to be 50-1. Lucky Score could be 20-1. That's a progressive four-year-old who has run four good races in a row. The chart says Traffic at the eighth pole in his May 15th race, but that's not really where the problem occurred. The jockey tapped on the brakes three different times before when running into trouble. He finished full of run behind another horse who won that race in here, roaring 40s, and then just cruised past second level allowance field last time. He's going to have to navigate traffic, but he'll be a big price. So I got a front ender and a closer that I like a little bit. A bold venture.
Fun race, and Mark Cassie was with us the other day, and he sort of was hinting about some of what's going on here with his. It's funny, Helium, for our friends at DJ Stable, Helium's a four-year-old now, the Ridgeling, by Ironicus. It feels like he's been around
by
forever.
you don't hear that very often.
Yeah. No. I don't even know where Ironicus is these days. I thought Candy Overlord had a bit of a interesting developing line.
I vaguely remember him, but where is he? Oh, yeah. Well, he was another one that I was considering when I thought the race might fall apart, but then I completely changed my approach on that and decided that they weren't going to go as fast as I thought. So I ended up downgrading horses like him. But, I mean, this is exactly the point. You know, you can take a serious look at a bunch of long-priced horses in here and think that you're going to have a shot.
Fun race, and I'm glad you looked at Woodbine and both the Trillium, which goes as the 7th, a mile and a 16th for the fillies and mares, and then the 6.5 furlong Bold Venture. A good card, actually, Woodbine as well. That's why I'm saying it's a weekend without lots of headlining Grade One stuff, but there's just a lot of good racing in a lot of places. Marcus, I because of your long association with Chicagoland, I have to at least ask your thoughts on what's transpiring at Churchill tomorrow.
What's transpiring?
I hear you.
Oh, I don't. I mean, it's a mile and an eighth, too. They can't even run a mile and a quarter.
Yeah.
We'll see. I didn't, Mr. Marty McGee covered the two big turf races, so I didn't dive deep into them at all. It looked fine. I covered the Lady Tack, which is going to have it's a five-horse field. Seventh matchup between Bells the One and Sconson. His old familiar rivals. And the Fort Larned, which is a pretty interesting race. I thought there were several contenders. The Million, there wasn't even a Million last year. And coincidentally, its winner, the winner of the inaugural and only Mr. D6, two Emmys, is running in the Oceanport on Sunday at Monmouth Park.
So it's a real reunion. Everything's coming together. You got the non-million, you got the last million non-million winner running on the same weekend, and let's just hope that the turf course down there in Louisville is capable of handling two races.
True. Hope for the best. And Marcus, I appreciate this, and we'll look ahead, and we'll game plan it out next week.
Yeah, I'm trying to pick horses that actually run next weekend. It's step one. You got to be in it to win it. Don't forget about the grosser price of On Berlin on Sunday either, Steve.
Well, because you've got your finger on the pulse of the international scene.
That was said tongue-in-cheek. I mean, without Torquato Tasso, there are some good horses in Germany. And that English mare Alpinista was going to Germany last year. I believe she was in this race. Don't quote me on that. But it's a more moderate group. The big race this weekend in Europe is the Jacques Le Morois on Sunday at Deauville, winning your in for the Breeders' Cup mile. And that one is definitely worth tuning into on Sunday morning. Let's see. That'd be 9:55 a.m. Eastern to see Inspiral versus Corribus, a battle of three-year-old filly versus three-year-old colt with a dose of State of Rest cutting back from the Prince of Wales estate. Very interesting race.
DRF Hirsch, everybody, and the DRF game plan on Saturdays. Marcus, I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, Steve. Have a good one.
I appreciate it, Marcus, everybody. Let's take a break. Our only one of the morning, and we got a lot to do. Jay Privman standing by, and Scully, Nick Tamaro. We're going to connect by phone to Chuck and Barry that are tromping Saratoga for the first time together. And what else? Hammer. We've got to get Hammer in here. And I've got the guys that are up at Saratoga, led by Tom, John D'Amico and the Georgia Horse Racing Coalition, as they try again. Going to try to get this through one way or the other. They've come so close. So, a lot to do yet. Stay with us. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.